Breakfast with Africa Milani.
Live, online, streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
DSTV channel 856, 92.7 and 106 FM.
Brooks Spector joins me now on the line. Brooks, both Vladimir Putin and Joseph Biden reflecting on the fact that the meeting was quite productive. I think Joe Biden even said it was a good meeting in as far as tone is concerned. Both political heads going into this meeting underplaying what is to be expected. Certainly not a resetting of relationships, but by all accounts, a mapping out, if you like, of a framework that will go towards resetting that relationship in the future, I hope, right? Good morning.
Good morning, Africa. The expectations bar was set low, and it was set low for a reason. None of this broad, deep, fundamental resetting of relations was anticipated or expected, so you couldn't disappoint. And the end result is they eked out a couple of not quite agreements, but places where there was not disagreement. They agreed to allow their respective ambassadors back to the respective capitals. They agreed to have technical discussions on things like cyber hacking, on things like the way in which the military is or is not deployed in the region of the Arctic Circle, and things like that. And as a result, there were no promises made that were not fulfilled. It was a risk. It was obviously a risk. I mean, you get caught up in the moment of things, and you end up over-promising or over-hoping, and you then get caught out. And so that didn't happen. And it was, after all, not the first time the two men had met, but it was the first time that they had met, obviously, since Joe Biden had been elected president. And they didn't even have, I should have mentioned this at first, they didn't even have a joint press conference at the end, which is a fairly standard hallmark of such things. They had, Vladimir Putin had his 10-15 minutes of media questioning, and then a few minutes after that, Joe Biden did his in a different venue. And then the two men respectively departed under the bright summer sun in Switzerland. And that was that.
In fact, Putin was so brief in his opening statement that he went straight into questions. He might as well just said, hello, what are your questions? He didn't really offer much as far as whatever statement would be that would come from him and his administration.
No, that's absolutely right. Although afterwards there was a joint statement that was released, not quite a communique that starts out with the two parties agreed on X and Y and Z, but the two parties discussed the following topics and the following things may happen. If you're going to have a meeting in which the leaders of two nations, which are clearly not at war, but at the same time are certainly not in the middle of a great love-in, if you're going to have that kind of a meeting, this is about as good as you're going to get.
Certainly is. Cyber war, I suppose, is one of the big topics going into this. And both parties walking away from here, agreeing to work on a framework that will make sure that, they never said this, but Biden wants to make sure that Putin does not meddle in future elections, for example, does not impact on core businesses in the United States, as we saw a couple of weeks ago, that resulted in one of the main pipelines being affected, and that saw prices of oil around the world going up.
No, you're doing my work for me, Africa. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Joe Biden went into that meeting with a tick sheet or a list of 16 major areas where cyber hacking must be considered a no-no. And there isn't, obviously, an agreement that, okay, I'm sorry, we won't do that again, from Vladimir Putin. But by the same token, there was agreement that there would be experts meetings to set out these parameters and these boundaries and these no-go areas. And, I mean, that's an accomplishment in itself. what I think we really, really have to understand is that the hard work, the trench warfare is going to come in the experts meetings and in the subsequent discussions between specialists. You'll note also that Joe Biden says he raised the question of human rights forcefully, especially the Russian treatment of opposition leader Alexei Navalny and Vladimir Putin in his questioning, in his media comments afterwards, said, well, I have to protect my country just like we can't, you don't want to let we don't want a version of your capital insurrection of January 6th to happen in Russia. Now, the equivalence of that is a little surprising, but that's how he sees it. Biden, of course, made the point that the democratic values and the way an opposition is treated are integral to American policy rather than being added on by a generous government. And it's at that point you begin to see where the differences really lie.
You're a former diplomat, Brooks, so you'll understand some of the, I suppose, the hidden language, if you like. Many people criticizing Joseph Biden here, saying that by agreeing to this summit, and it should be noted, it was the Biden administration that, asked for the summit, not the other way around, that you are elevating the status of Vladimir Putin and almost seeing him as an equal. Even in the wording that was used by Biden ahead of the meeting, some would say, wait a minute, you're giving this guy a lot more profile than what he deserves at the moment.
Well, some of those same people who are making those criticisms are also the ones who cheered on the idea that the former president went to Helsinki to have a meeting with Vladimir Putin and literally embraced him and agreed with him and said that I trust you over my own government. You'll note that when Biden agreed to have this meeting by offering the possibility, the people beneath him or under him in his administration negotiated a whole range of things that Vladimir Putin would arrive first at the actual site of the summit, that there would not be a joint press conference, that we wouldn't stand there together in front of the world's media, and so forth. So, I guess you're left with the idea that if you have an adversary or an antagonist and you want to engage with them or negotiate with them, one of the things you ultimately have to do is meet with them. And it does not say that you are giving away the store, you are agreeing to them as an absolute equal on all things by having the meeting. You have to judge the results. I was actually rather pleased that nobody used the words that the meeting was a frank exchange of views, because that's sort of diplomatic shorthand for there was much screaming and yelling across the table.
In fact, the U.S. president saying that I know we make foreign policy out to be this great, great skill that somehow is sort of like a secret code. All foreign policy is a logical extension of personal relationships. It's the way human nature functions, which is why he then obviously pushed for this man-to-man, let's meet face-to-face kind of conversation. Those had only two of the three sessions that were planned for the day, the first session being the presidents, the two presidents, their respective foreign affairs sort of secretaries, whatever they're called, in their respective countries, and obviously translators. That seemed to have gone on longer than what was anticipated, and I imagine because that session covered a lot more ground than I suppose you and I anticipated, there was then no need for a third session.
Well, I think also that there wasn't a long, elaborate prologue to the discussions between the two men. They just got right down to their respective lists of things to be talked to about. And if you do that, then the padding that you built into the day, well, I guess you just don't need it. You've gone through your list. You've said what you have to say. you've had your farewell handshake, and it's time to go. And if you'd had that putative third session or extended second session, perhaps they would have simply been in a position of reiterating the things that had already been said originally. What I was also, I don't know what pleased, but certainly reassured by, was that right at the beginning, it was not simply the two leaders by themselves with an interpreter, but the Secretary of State on the American side and the Foreign Minister, Sergei Lavrov, on the Russian side, were in the first meeting right from the beginning. And then in the second, there were additional officials, including on the Russian side, the General Gerasimov, who was or is responsible for this strategy of engagement, kind of hostile engagement, but not warfare, if you will. And as a result, there was some, it was not all an abstract discussion about the respective natures of the two societies. There were some rather specific moments. We're never going to get a transcript of it, and what I think we should look for is over the next couple of days, a couple, perhaps some strategically placed background briefings or quote-unquote leaks about the type of things, the nature of the discussion, the specifics that were involved, so that it starts to flesh out how and what was said and what and the way in which it was said. But of course, in the end, there are no signed documents. There are no agreements. There is a way forward. And for a 3-hour meeting, I guess that's pretty good.
It is indeed. Brooke Spector, thank you very much for your time this morning. U.S. foreign policy expert, a former diplomat himself, and of course, associate editor at the Daily Maverick. It's 5:20.